problem. Okay. Pre-COVID, inflation was 2%. Okay. So now it jumps huge. And everybody's right. From 2% up to, what, 7% plus, we're going to start to come down, no doubt about it. And you're going to be right. It's going to be 4.5, 5. The issue is, just because it came down from 7, the real issue is where it started. And I think that's where everybody's going to fall into this trap. Oh, my God, look at half of this inflation has disappeared. But it's still significantly higher than pre-COVID. Higher. And that is the point. And the other issue is, in my opinion, where's the tightening been? Give me a break. We're 0 to 25. They're still buying. SOMA was $30 billion for the three-year note. Okay? I don't see any tightening. I can't imagine that you have a microscope bigger than mine.
Rick, come on.
Well,
there's 90 basis points. Rick, there's 90 basis points of tightening.
That's the market. That's
Powell
the market.
Pivoted.
The market's doing it because the Fed is behind the curve.
But that's the Fed. That's how it works, Rick. That's how it works.
But I think that's great, though. The Fed has done nothing.
The Fed has done nothing. Blah, blah, blah.
Rick, I totally agree.
Rick,
the Fed's done absolutely nothing, but the free market has come to the rescue here in tightening. And the inflation's tightening this as well. I mean, it's brought... Money growth, nominal
Very
money
simple.
Growth is from 27% to 13%.
An economy that's got to be slowed down, of course, is going to experience less pressures on the demand side. Of course. That's the whole point of it.
Right. The other thing.
Happy Thursday morning, freaks. It's your boy Odell here for Citadel Dispatch 55. Yes, this is a second Citadel Dispatch in this week. It's the first time we're doing it. First time we're doing two dispatches in 1 week. I have our boys, Seed Signer and Tony, here in the studio. So I felt it was prudent to have this conversation in person while we had the opportunity. Citadel Dispatch is an interactive live show about Bitcoin distributed systems, privacy, and open source software. Our show is 100% audience funded without ads and sponsors, purely focused on actionable Bitcoin discussion. Thank you so much to you freaks for continuing to support the show and keeping it ad free. I really do appreciate it. The easiest way to support Dispatch is through podcasting 2.0 apps. My favorite two are Fountain Podcast and Breeze Wallet. They work like traditional podcast apps. You simply search Citadel Dispatch, press subscribe, load it up with sats, and you can choose how many sats per minute you think Dispatch is worth, and it streams the sats directly to my node. You can also support the show at CitadelDispatch.com. We have a BTC Pay server set up there, so you can pay. You can support the show via Lightning or through on-chain. And as always, I have a pay name, easy to remember. It's Odell. So if you use Sparrow or Samurai, you can support the show via pay name. As always, Dispatch is broadcast via Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and BitcoinTV.com. All archives are on BitcoinTV.com afterwards. You can use any podcast app to listen to the archives as well. You just search Citadel Dispatch. Thank you. Thank you all. For joining us again. I hope you enjoy this rip. I think it's going to be a good one. So with all that said, we have Seed Signer here. How's it going, Seed Signer?
Good. How are you?
And we have Tony again in the studio. How's it going, Tony?
What's up, guys?
Fuck yeah. So the focus today is basically the Seed Signer, obviously, a signing device, an open source signing device, and also just a discussion on open source software, the power of open source software. And we're going to kind of just see where the conversation takes us. As always, if you want to join the live chat, we're on Matrix. You can, the easiest way to join is to go to CitadelDispatch.com and click that Citadel chat link. And then you just follow the instructions. You download Element, you make an account, and you join the chat. Now, that is a live discussion that allows you to participate directly in the discussion as we are going, but it's also a very lively discussion throughout the week. So consider joining us. We have over 500 really good ride or die Bitcoiners there. Awesome. So where do you guys want to start? We have a seed signer in front of us. We have the person seed signer in front of us. We have a seed QR. First time I ever saw that, which is right there. That's pretty fucking cool. And when I say right there, I'm just pointing to the guys in the studio, and I know none of you can see that. I guess the first place to start is we had Nash Bitcoiners last night, and I think we're all a little bit hungover after that.
Maybe some more than others, but yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Just a little bit. I wish the bars would have closed at 2 a.m. instead so I can be a little bit more responsible.
Personal responsibility, Tony. Personal responsibility. What did you think? That was your first Nash Bitcoiners. How was the experience?
I loved it. I loved the, I think the right word is like the Chatham House rules, that like no recording devices, no photos, like what happens there stays there. I thought that was like a great element of the meetup, but like the people were great, very engaged. Like everybody I talked to, like you could tell like they're interested, like they're paying attention.
Fuck yeah.
They're engaged, and it's a great scene down here.
I thought it was pretty cool that you brought seed signers with you so people could buy them and get them directly in person instead of having them shipped to their house or their office or something.
Yeah. Any like opportunity that I can jump on to get them to people like in person. I think that's a great opportunity because you're not giving a credit card company your identity. You're not going to get emails from like a wallet provider. You're like, it's a great way to get those without me knowing anything about you.
Well, I bought one last night. I'm looking forward to like putting it together. It'll be my first seed signer to actually have. So, yeah, thank you for that. Thank you for bringing them. I think it was like last Nashville Bitcoin meetup. There was, Lightning point of sale systems that a guy was selling.
Very cool.
Very hardware. You know, I'm not sure if you've seen one of those before, but those are awesome as well. And I think it's like just the best way to be able to like buy in person, you know, directly from the source. Like they are the manufacturer, you know, you are the, you know, manufacturer seed signer. I don't have to worry about like, you know, man in the middles or anything like that too, even. So I think it's like the best way to kind of, you know, get hardware.
And honestly, like with everything being open source, I'm kind of hoping that, you know, a kind of mini cottage industry springs up to where like people who are trusted parties in other parts of like the US or other parts of the world who have a reputation in their local Bitcoin community, like maybe they order some parts and like it's a way for them to stack sats a little bit on the side.
It could be a cool way to like fund a meetup, right? Yeah. Like get a little bit extra sats for a meetup and then also support your local community.
Yeah, the person that was selling the Lightning point of sale system, they weren't even they weren't even the
they weren't Ben Ark.
Yeah, they weren't Ben Ark. So they were, and they were honest. They're like, yeah, I'm just charging like $10 more. Like, is that fine? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, thank you. I don't have to go through a shipping service or anything. So I was happy to pay it.
The Lightning point of sale was actually kind of funny because we had Maulers in the house for that one. And I picked him up from the airport. Went to the meetup, and I got really excited, and I showed him the Lightning point of sale. I was like, look how cool this is. It's offline Lightning point of sale, but it uses LNURL, and Strike doesn't support LNURL. So it was very much a bittersweet thing. He's like, really, Matt, you're going to drag me into the LNURL controversy?
I did the same thing to Rockstar last night, too, talking about the point of sale system.
That's how we make change.
So where should we start? We've had seed signer on the show previously. We went deep on seed signer. I don't remember how long seed signer. Do you remember how long ago that was?
I would say it was last summer if I had to guess, like maybe 6-7 months.
So a lot has changed since then. What has changed? How's the project going?
Things are going very well, and that's primarily due to just additional people with such great skills, like coming on board to help in various different ways. I don't know if Keith Mukai was involved. I know that Nick...
He was, because Keith was on the show with you.
Oh, duh.
It was me, you, and Keith.
That would mean that he was involved. Yeah, me, you, and Keith. Keith has really brought like a ton of creativity and productivity to the project in terms of implementing new features and coming up with creative ways to solve pain points that are kind of like built into the system. So our user experience has improved a ton, but like since then also, there is a Bitcoiner in Europe. I don't want to dox like specifically where he is, but he is, involved in manufacturing like a permanent long-term backup solution for us, where you take your QR code that is like just an alternative version of your seed phrase that makes it quick and easy to import into Seed Signer. So you take that QR code and you can actually stamp it into metal with this device using just a simple center punch instead of like some of the solutions you see where you have to stamp individual letters into like washers or right. some other kind of metal. So you just have one center punch and you basically create handmade like a QR
code. Right. So the center punch is like this little cylinder thing
right.
you can buy like any hardware store or online or whatever.
Yeah, there's a couple of versions. There's either like one that you use kind of like caveman with a hammer, like a, you know, a hammer and a punch thing, but there are also automated ones that are a little bit easier to handle that work almost as good as like the hammer and chisel type solution. But yeah, so you create this metal backup.
We're like cavemen now. We just went back right. to the hammer and chisel.
But you can create this backup that is, you know, fire resistant, crush resistant, water resistant, that I'm excited for that as a great storage medium for people to especially set up a multi-sig and be able to like be confident in their setup and preserve their keys long-term that way. But yeah, just other people jumping in. There was another, it was just this week, there was a guy over, I believe he's in somewhere in the UK, who produced like a new version of the Seed Signer enclosure that looks a lot like a classic 8-bit NES controller. And it's
yeah, that
just,
looks dope.
Yeah, it's like great design on his part. And like I haven't gotten a test one in hand, but he's been able to implement like a D-pad instead of...
And it's all 3D printed, right?
It is. Now it uses a couple different types of 3D printing. There's like the traditional type where you use the filament that people are more familiar with, but there's another type of 3D printer that's called SLA, and it's where you have a vat of like liquid resin and you have a photostatic screen that hopefully I'm using the right terminology. The screen illuminates and basically like photo activates the resin so that it hardens like one crazy tiny layer at a time. And the thing about those is you can produce items with like so much more precision and detail than you can with like a traditional 3D printer. So to get that D-pad working with our LCD hat, like you need a really precise piece of equipment. So I'm excited to see that he's launched sales of those, and they've like gotten good feedback so far. And I'm excited to just see more of them in the wild. The more we can make the device like appealing to people just visually in terms of better usability, in terms of interacting with the controls, the more it looks like something, some other type of consumer electronic device that they use.
Right. Like that bare joystick or whatever without the case on top is a little bit, it's a little bit finicky or maybe intimidating.
It just looks more technical to people. And we're any way that I can communicate to people that Seed Signer, is not just a project for like Bitcoin hackers or Bitcoin like makers. It's a project that is like attainable for people with, you know, very modest technical skills. It's not something that people need to conceive of as this like super highly technical project.
So I'm looking back. It was Citadel Dispatch 33 was when you guys were on, which is block 694,094 blocks. And then this one is block 722645. So what is that? I hate math. Bitcoiner. I'm a Bitcoiner who hates math.
I'm not going to do that.
It's been like 30,000 blocks, since we last had you on. I think, before we go any deeper, just in case, so if you didn't listen to the last one, consider, checking out Citadel Dispatch 33. That's citadeldispatch.com/CD33. But let's just do a quick overview on what the Seed Signer is.
Right. And like I get a little finicky about the hardware wallet versus signer thing, but the only like distinction there is I conceive of a hardware wallet as something that has some sort of secure element technology in it that is meant as a technological safeguard to store your keys. So a hardware wallet is something that is intended to be storage for your keys, whereas a signer, it's just taking your keys and generating signatures with them. And a signer, I guess, kind of definitionally for me means that it's not meant to hold your private keys. Like once the device is turned off, it's not meant to store your keys. Like with Seed Signer. So if I can just kind of go over the basic value proposition, Seed Signer does three things. It helps you trustlessly generate private keys using real world entropy. And then the kind of second functionality is once you
and when you say entropy, it's randomness, which is the key element to generating secure private keys.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, there's some debate like in the Bitcoin space and larger computer science community about like, can you really generate truly random data with code that was written by human beings and like technology that was made by human beings? I'm not gonna dive into that debate, but I just feel like a real great source of entropy that is accessible to everybody is just the world around us, whether that be picking BIP39 words out of a hat or rolling dice 99 times, or we even have a feature where you can take a digital photograph and capture the entropy from that to as well as some other sources to be able to
because the Seed Signer has a built-in camera.
Yes.
And then the key, I mean, you dropped the lead there. The key here is that the Seed Signer can accomplish a lot what hardware wallets can accomplish, the hardware wallets you can buy at like a website or something, but it's all off the shelf parts. Last time you were on, the parts came out to about $50. Now I think they're a little bit more expensive.
Yeah, the tricky part is the Raspberry Pis. There's with all the, I guess it's with all the supply chain BS, like the RPi Foundation has had to pause some of their production. So the specific Raspberry Pi Zero, which is a version 1.3 that we use, and the special thing about that version is there's no Bluetooth, no Wi-Fi built into it. So you can think of it as like this inherently little air-gapped computer. Those have been a little bit harder to find. I think they're running for about $30 on eBay.
That's the most expensive part, right?
Right, yeah.
And then you have the screen. There's a screen on it and there's a camera.
Yeah, the screen's like $10 to $15, depending on where you buy it. And the camera is like you can get those for $5 or a little bit more on Amazon, depending on where you buy it.
Cool. Okay, so the Seed Signer is a stateless device, which means when you unplug it from power, it loses all of its memory. So you have to enter your private keys every time you use it. Since last time, you have now this QR code method. And you kind of talked about it earlier already, but like this idea that you basically record your seed, not as seed words, but you record it in a QR code format, and you have these metal plates where you can punch in the QR code. I guess you look at the screen shows you how to punch it, then you punch it in, and then every time you boot up the Seed Signer, you just use the camera to scan the QR code to load up your seed, right?
Yeah, that's correct. We also have... in the GitHub repo, you don't have to stamp it on metal. Like if you're just looking to test with a device, or if for whatever reason you're not worried about fire, we have some templates in the repo where you can just use a home printer, print up a QR code template that you then like with a Sharpie marker, you can color in the dots. Keith also came up with a super clever kind of interface for transcribing the QR codes where, you know, it'd be kind of overwhelming to transcribe a 29 by 29 QR code dot by dot, but he breaks it down into 5x5 kind of like quadrants. And you just step through the grid 5x5 by 5x5. And it sounds a little cumbersome maybe, but usually in about 10 minutes, you don't have to be super meticulous about filling in the squares. QR codes are pretty forgiving that way with the built-in error correction. But yeah, you can still type in your seed phrase using, you know, the joystick and buttons on Seed Signer. You know, if you want to bring a seed in that you created using a different device or that you're using on a different device. But the QR code was just a great hack that we came up with in terms of being able to instantaneously get your seed active in the device, because like you said, it's stateless. So every time you power it on,
it was a fucking pain in the ass. You had to fucking enter the seed.
Yeah, that was
one letter at a time.
Point. I wanted to ask if there was any passphrase option that you added to it as well. So like, say for instance, I have this QR code on a piece of paper, I scan it. Is there any like additional security components to it as well, where I can like maybe enter like a 25th word?
Yeah.
Or things like that, just so someone doesn't just fly by and like capture my QR code and run off.
Right. That was important. Something that was important to us early on, even before I believe we implemented the seed QR, was to be able to support BIP39. Some people call it word 25. Some people call it passphrases. But yeah, the important thing for people to understand with that is that the entropy from like the data from the passphrase you choose, and obviously people want to choose like a strong passphrase, but the data within that passphrase is incorporated into the entropy that makes up your key. So it's not just like an access mechanism to your key, it's actually part of your key. So you have to make sure you somehow, either in your memory or otherwise, preserve that. But yeah, so that's a great kind of mitigating factor. Depending on where people plan on storing and accessing their QR codes, it's a safeguard that some people choose, some people don't. But it was important to us to have that there because, like you said, like depending on your OPSEC situation, you should obviously be aware of who's around you or if there's any sort of cameras, you know, in the area. Ideally, there aren't any of those things, but you know, Bitcoiners are careful, so that passphrase is another kind of additional safeguard. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Well, you know, one time I set up a friend with a cold card and we went through the whole process and he stamped it on steel. He like got his seed ready to go. And then his wife took a picture and he had his, like he had written out the words on a piece of paper before he stamped it into steel. And you could see it in the background of the picture and he had to do everything over again.
Oh my gosh. Like I was, so even before SeedCenter, I went through the process with actually a Spectre DIY of going through and putting my seeds into metal. And it's, you know, it's a long laborious process where you have like, you know, 26 stamp letters and you're constantly pulling out different stamp letters and hammering on them. My son's helping me just kind of like pull the letters out for me while I'm stamping them in. And he started to say one of the words out loud. And I was like, no, we don't even say these words out loud. There's probably like Siri or Alexa. You know,
like a million different live mics everywhere.
Right, right, right.
Go into the bathroom and do your seed. Get in the bathtub. So what do you want to talk about?
Yeah. Well, since you brought up the Spectre DIY, I wanted to ask you, like, in the whole DIY space, whether if it's hardware wallets or signing devices, you know, what does that current environment look like? I think there's also like the Jade wallet. Is that DIY as well? And then like how, you know, maybe if you wanted to do, you know, a comparison or something, just like a quick little snippet. I'm not sure of all the various DIY, you know, devices that are out there.
I'm familiar with Jade, but I'm not, I honestly don't know if there's a DIY option for Jade. I'd love it if there was, like, I'd love to see more projects like this. There's, I think, I don't know if Jade is partly on the MD5 stick platform, which is another kind of one of these single board computer kind of pre-built, pre-made platforms. Somebody has actually done a version of SeedCenter kind of on that called Crux, I believe it is. But the Crux, Spectre DIY and SeedCenter they're the only ones that I'm familiar with. I hope that we see more development in this space because I kind of see the Spectre DIY and SeedCenter as emblematic of a new generation of hardware wallets that are intended to bring some power back to users in terms of there's a lot of trust that goes into the existing hardware wallet kind of landscape where it's this proprietary device that this manufacturer has made. And from what I understand, they're all good actors. It's just we as Bitcoiners have to trust their implementation of a secure element and their, you know, mostly they're open source, but we still have to trust their kind of like hardware implementation, as well as some of the personally identifying information you have to give up to order one of those through the mail. So DIY may not be an option for everybody, but it's super important to me that it is an option out there because it allows Bitcoin users to reclaim some of their privacy and necessarily like not have to put trust in third parties quite so much.
Yeah, privacy in terms of just like shipping it to your house, and so like you can pretty much walk into like a hardware store, you know, like something like Fry's and Micro Center, and like pretty much pick up these devices as long as they're in stock. So like I love the privacy aspect of it as well, and I think it's super important that we have this option, so we don't just say, yeah, let's everyone just use Treasure and everyone just use Ledger, and then, you know, right, things like that. On the one hot topic that's kind of come out, I guess maybe this year and last year, where do you kind of see the whole NFC environment? Is that something that you would look at as incorporated into SeedSigner? I think there's been some arguments that NFC is cheaper to implement than a camera, but like, what I have wondered about that is like you have implemented a camera and a very affordable one. So, you know, where do you kind of sit on the whole NFC versus like camera thing, or a combination of both?
Yeah. It's not something that's on our roadmap. It's not something I can rule out in the future. Everybody has to kind of make their own choices in terms of their preferences on hardware profiles. For me, and this is maybe a little bit of a tinfoil hat thing, but what I don't like about NFC is that it is communication that I can't see. And, you know, that it's excellent that it is like geographically sort of like restricted, so that only within a certain number of meters, or I don't know what the spec is, but you have to be positionally close to two devices.
You basically have to touch it almost, right?
You're right. They have to be like super close.
Yeah.
I just don't trust information that I can't see. And you don't, like, even when you're sitting there with your hardware wallet that's near your phone or your laptop, like, again, tinfoil hat stuff, but I don't feel absolutely assured that those devices aren't somehow communicating without my awareness. With SeedSigner, what I really like about the AirGap QRs is that, one, they're auditable. It's not a super easy process, but if you really wanted to know what information is going back and forth between your wallet coordinator and your signing device, like, you could audit that and confirm that there's no nefarious sort of data or funny business or whatever. But another aspect of it that I like, it's very apparent when the two devices are communicating. Like, the only way that SeedSigner can communicate with the outside world is via the camera that's built into it and then the screen. So if you're not, you know, using the camera to capture QR codes and you're not holding the screen up to your laptop to relay information back to it, like, it's not communicating with anything else. And if you suspect that like there's something weird going on while you're relaying QR codes, you can abort that communication like immediately just by removing the QRs from the field of view. I'll say it one more time. Like, is that tinfoil hat territory? Maybe, but it's all about meeting people where they are. And me, with a background kind of like in digital forensics and information security, like, you know, certain technologies that were once believed to be secure were subsequently, you know, over time, security is a cat and mouse game. There are vulnerabilities that are discovered and then solved for, and then other vulnerabilities are discovered. I just like the assurance of that, you know, I know when the two devices are talking to each other.
Yeah, exactly. And as I think, just even being able to have like different trade-offs and vectors for each, right? Like, you know, I think this is where like multi-sig is really important. And, you know, we can say like, I have, you know, one of each of these devices, and if there's a flaw with one of them or the other, or like, you know, I keep one in like super secure storage, like I don't even let anyone like get access to the actual hardware wallet versus my SeedSigner, which I can carry around in person. Even without the QR code attached, like I can walk around with that in my backpack and just be fine, because there's no loss of funds as a possibility. And then, you know, when I get home, or maybe I have my QR code in like two geographic spots, you know, when I get to the next location, then I can bust out my SeedSigner and be ready to go. So, where do you kind of see like, or maybe that's part of it, but where do you kind of see like SeedSigner in the realm of like other hardware wallets and signing devices? Do you see like maybe for yourself or for other users, like them doing multi-sig a lot and with this as one of the keys in the quorum?
Right. You bring up a good point that like not all storage use cases are created equal. So Bitcoiners may have, you know, some funds that they carry around that are like akin to like a wallet that they have in their pocket. Or, you know, maybe some funds that maybe it's like a little bit more money and you want additional safeguards, kind of like a checkbook. And then you have like your long-term savings, like your HODL stash. And they're like, it totally makes sense to have different security profiles for each of those kind of different use cases. And I think like NFC can totally make sense for like everyday wallet use and even like a checkbook. But like for my long-term stash, like that's where I really start thinking about like vulnerabilities and ways that I can mitigate different vulnerabilities. But to get back to your question, Seed Signer, when I conceived of it and first like, you know, started creating the proof of concept, it was created with multi-signature in mind. And it was created with like long-term Bitcoin storage in mind. So that was kind of like built into it. Now, some of our users that have like, you know, discovered the device and become more familiar with it, more comfortable with it, like are comfortable using it for more like day-to-day spending or more frequent spending. But, you know, we're designed kind of with the initial presumption that this is something to help people store Bitcoin with over the long term. And we really try to put a lot of thought and care into the user interface to make the multi-sig experience as user-friendly and approachable as possible. You know, I've kind of watched multi-sig evolve over the last few years. And when, you know, when there first started to be rumblings of it, it was super technical and theoretical. And then once like, you know, standards started to emerge and it became a little more feasible, that was the point at which like people had to start building tools that were accessible to not just highly technical users, but accessible to more like what I call everyday Bitcoiners. And, you know, Seed Signer arose out of my own interest to transfer my long-term Bitcoin storage from what was previously like a Shamir's secret sharing type setup, which is kind of like a proxy of multi-sig. And I wanted to get to real multi-sig on the protocol. And when I started kind of like looking back into it, I'd set multi-sig away for a while because the tools were being built. And when I revisited it, like Spectre desktop, you know, had been out for a little while and was improving and becoming much more user approachable. And so I think over time, like the multi-sig tools are going to become more intuitive, more user-friendly, because I hate this notion that multi-sig is only for highly technical Bitcoiners. Like if it's something that only highly technical Bitcoiners can use, like we at SeedSigner are doing it wrong and the people making the coordinators are doing it wrong. Like we can make the tools such that they're accessible to people. And I've already strayed so far probably from your question.
I love it. This is awesome.
But yeah, that's like we are built with multi-sig in mind, and that's something I'm personally really excited about.
We have Silent Link in the comments saying that a friend of his worked in a marketing startup that successfully identified and located all visitors' NFC-enabled bank cards in a shop with advanced antennas. And he says that you can communicate with NFC through a wall if you have a higher-powered antenna. So seems to validate some of what you said. Just to like bring this back, I mean, so when we're talking about using a Seed Signer with multi-sig or single sig, the actual flow is rather simple, right? So you can use like a Blue Wallet on your phone. You can use Spectre desktop, as you said, on your computer, or Sparrow on your computer.
Right.
And what happens there is it is showing QR codes on the screen to construct your transaction. You're scanning that with the camera on the Seed Signer. Then the Seed Signer signing that transaction, showing a new QR code on the Seed Signer screen, which then you scan with either your computer's camera or your phone's camera, and then you broadcast the transaction. So it's a relatively simple flow, even if it sounds more complicated on air.
It's definitely like more rote, like a more labor-intensive kind of flow. But feedback I've gotten from people is that like going through those steps one by one of, you know, moving the PSPT or what I would call as like a rough draft of a transaction that includes most of the information, just not the signatures needed to spend the money. Like the process of moving that from the coordinator on your laptop or on your phone into the Seed Signer, and then adding the keys to the device and then adding the signatures to the PSBT and then going through the process of passing that back to the coordinator that's going to interact with the protocol. I have gotten feedback from people, which I love to hear, that it helped them understand the basic mechanics of the process of multi-sig and of partially signed transactions. So it breaks it down into steps that I think, for whatever reason, just resonate more with people.
That's awesome. Are there ever any, I know when you start getting like really advanced multi-sig, for instance, some of the data can be kind of large. Is there ever a picture quality issue that you see at all with either the signing device camera quality or the screen quality on your seed signer?
So with seed signer, the camera that we have in it, like even for an inexpensive camera, it's a very capable camera. Like I've been impressed at the size of some of the QR codes that we've been able to import, like in a single frame, with the density that they have. With the screen that we have, with the current first kind of iteration of Seed Signer, it's pretty limited. So it's 240 pixels by 240 pixels. And with larger transactions where you're consolidating UTXOs, or if, you have a larger multi-sig, you're going to be holding the Seed Signer screen in front of your webcam like for a little bit longer period of time. I personally have, so for our development fund, for the Seed Signer project, we have a 4 of 6 multi-sig that, I myself have a couple of the keys and then 4 other contributors have keys. And when we have done distributions from that, like I sign everything with the Seed Signer. And so it's been such that, it's like I said, I'm holding the screen up for a little bit longer, but once you get it dialed in, it's a reliable process. It works back and forth. We've tried to improve the user experience as much as we can in terms of being able to adjust the brightness of the QR codes as they're displayed on the screen. Sometimes at full brightness, it creates a glare that your webcam doesn't like. So you can reduce that. But there are some other, what I'm going to get at here is like, it's software and the user experience is going to improve over time. As well as I'm super bullish on us getting into supporting multiple different displays, especially a touchscreen, because the larger the screen gets, the fewer QRs you have to pass back and forth because you can pack more information into them.
What I've noticed is, from my experience, is the integrated webcam on my laptop has trouble. It's like not as high quality. Right. So like obvious, and also it's just a little bit awkward trying to use a integrated webcam on a laptop to actually scan the QR code. Ways around that is like having a USB webcam, like a cheap USB webcam that you can actually like hold in your hand and is separate from the screen, is usually higher quality. Also just in general, like a new gen phone with Blue Wallet tends to be a much more user-friendly experience in terms of scan and broadcast.
And there's a couple, in addition to the brightness, which helps with a lot of those webcam issues, we've also implemented some QR density settings. So if you want to reduce the resolution of the QRs so that they each frame takes a little bit less data, but it's a little easier to scan, that's an option that helps a lot of people. And also on webcams, you're right that the integrated webcams on some laptops, just for whatever reason, whether it's the drivers and the software implementation or if it's just the hardware itself, isn't able to capture a good enough resolution. But I've found, especially on Linux, there are some kind of like secondary driver packs where you can tweak the ambient light settings and tweak the focus settings. And I've been able to get it working on some fairly, like I have a $250 like netbook that I was able to get scanning working, but it can take tweaking.
Yeah. Have you looked at any of the projects that kind of do like GIF-based QR codes? So like the QR code just cycles through multiple, like it scatters the data across
animated QRs.
Animated QRs. Yeah. I think Christopher Allen has like a project utilizing it and trying to do that in the Bitcoin space. It seems promising because there's also like data error handling and checksums too. So you make sure you're not like getting some bad packets of data that gets scans. Have you looked at any of that at all?
No, that's absolutely implemented. So for like transactions, usually when you're passing a PSBT, there's at least three or four QR code frames. So we do implement animated QR codes, and the standards that Christopher Allen's working on, for some of the coordinators that we support, we use those standards. And I look forward to those being kind of like, once we figure out what the best practices are in terms of, you know, error handling and how to handle those animated QRs. I look forward to just like, not saying that we support these three coordinators, but we support any coordinator that, you know, is consistent with whatever standards emerge.
And just to like add back in there in the scanning discussion, it's something about it's not even just, well, first of all, I am using Linux, so that probably has something to do with it. Like, I imagine if you have like a new gen MacBook or something, it'll have a better camera or better software or whatever in terms of scanning. But there's something about like actually, because when you're using a phone to scan it, you're actually using the back camera, which is a better camera.
Right.
And you actually can like point and aim, like you see what the screen sees, rather than like blocking your screen, trying to use the it's just something about the integrated webcam is just like it's just physically more cumbersome in terms of trying to use it. I see, and let's be honest, right? Like the majority of people that are coming in to Bitcoin over the next 5 years, 10 years, will probably just be using a mobile phone as their primary device anyway. So I don't really think it's, if anything, like that should be the UX that is targeted, right?
Yeah. And especially like in developing parts of the world where people, maybe their first, you know, experience with Bitcoin is with like a hosted Lightning wallet. And then as they accumulate a little bit more Bitcoin and they start thinking about seizure resistance and security issues, they're going to want to, you know, set up something with like a more secure kind of signing device or hardware wallet. And then they're going to start to think about multi-sig. And what I'm super bullish on, like hats off to Blue Wallet for like being right now, they're kind of the only game in town in terms of a mobile based coordinator. But I'm also looking forward to other wallets that will implement more flexible multi-sig kind of implementations on mobile, so that people in parts of the world where laptop computers and desktop computers are kind of more the exception than the rule, like people who are operating in a mobile first environment, like they'll have access to more tools while at the same time being able to keep their private keys off of their phone. Like that's just a security no-no for securing larger amounts of Bitcoin, as I'm sure you guys know. And yeah.
Unless you have $4 billion, then you can just keep it on your cloud storage.
Yeah, then you bypass the phone and you go straight to the cloud.
Yeah, on that note, you know, what would you say like the suggestion should be for just like a user to just get started with Seed Signer? Like what should be the very basic beginner flow for it? Is it using Seed Signer, you know, using a piece of paper and then using Blue Wallet, or like kind of how, like if you were to say like how to get started in like the easiest way possible, just to like, you know, throw maybe $100, you know, just to spending money on it?
Right. No, I'm like, as much as I love Blue Wallet, I hope they can get to a testnet implementation, because I am like super big on testnet. Like even before you put $10 that you're going to move around or whatever, like people need to practice with their storage system and be comfortable with it. And like testnet is perfect for that. And it's something that even, you know, your average Bitcoiner can get up and running with Sparrow, like in less than 10 minutes with a testnet setup. And in terms of, you know, getting that kind of independent custody savings set up in place, I'm super excited about an independent custody guide that I'm working on. And I kind of have the first rough draft finished, and I'm selectively letting a few other Bitcoiners I know look at it to give me feedback. But I anticipate that's going to be done within like the next few weeks. And I'm bullish to get that out, because I realize that like I've done some walkthrough videos on how to set up like a simple 203 and stuff, but in terms of a proper guide that people can follow kind of step by step, as well as a guide that explains some of the security choices and some of the implementation choices that we've made with Seed Signer, something that spells those out so people can understand those. I'm excited to get that out, just so people can have like an exhaustive go by it. Kind of, I realized that we didn't have anything like that, and it was an obvious gap in our ecosystem. So I'm excited to get that out there. But currently, if somebody's excited to jump into it, on Citadel Dispatch, on BitcoinTV.com, I believe I have a simple 2 of 3 setup demonstration that people can kind of use as a go-by, and we're going to have more stuff coming out on the way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. What are you excited about besides that coming down the pipeline? If you want to share any of that.
Yeah. Bunch of stuff like very near term stuff for those metal QRs that we talked about. I'd anticipate those being available like within the next month or two. But beyond that, our two developers, especially Keith McKay, is deep into what I would call like the second full rewrite of our software. So kind of like the third iteration of SeedSigner's basic code structure. First being the proof of concept that was kind of hammered out by me. And then big props to Nick, who's our other kind of lead developer, who came in and took my sloppy, ignorant spaghetti code and turned it into something that was much more performant and much more structured. And now Keith, who's kind of like a Python native first language kind of guy, is doing a complete rewrite that's going to increase the quality of the underlying structure of the code, make it more performant, more to where other developers familiar with the standards can step in and use kind of like modular portions of it to implement new features or change things. But what is also coming with that kind of like new rewrite of the code is an entirely new user interface that we have. I want to give a shout out to, he's a NIM on Twitter, BC1 Easy is his NIM. And he is, as I understand, like a user interface designer. That's his daytime gig. And he has like been super generous with his time and expertise to help us overhaul our user interface to make it much more graphically driven, to make the user flows more intuitive, and to make SeedSigner, like when this code comes out in our next like major version release, like it's going to transform the device in its current form as something that almost looks like DOS-like when you look at it, because you're selecting like these, you know, text-based options on a screen. It's going to make it look much more like a device you would buy, as opposed to something that you would build yourself. So I think I'm excited to get people's reactions to that, and for just people seeing that to make them more excited to take the plunge and like maybe consider building one themselves. That's going to be in our 0.5.0 release. I'm super excited about that. And also coming down the line, like two other things that come to mind are multi-language support. So Keith was the one who led the multi-language support charge with Spectre Desktop. And he's
all right.
Has experience in that. So I'm eager to get, like, we have a lot of people have reached out that are not English first speakers in different parts of the world who know enough English and our menu simple enough that they can kind of navigate through it. But I think also getting versions of SeedSigner out to where once you power it on, you select your native language and it becomes a much more intuitive, approachable device for maybe less technical Bitcoiners. So I'm super excited about multi-language support. And then there's also another contributor in our Telegram group and that I've interacted with we've already gotten it into proof of concept. If you follow me on Twitter, you've probably seen it, but we are going to be moving away from building on top of like a stock version of the Raspberry Pi operating system to a custom build root Linux implementation, where it's going to be a much smaller footprint and it only contains kind of like the necessary building blocks that we need. And a couple like great things come out of that. I'm going to screw up his name, but on Twitter, he's called Desobediente Tecnologico. Like he's...
you want to spell that for us?
But he's super, super sharp guy. And kind of the possibilities that open... That the custom OS opens up for us is first and foremost, it makes it such that there's a static OS image that when you power on the device, the static OS image gets loaded into memory in the Raspberry Pi. And once it's fully loaded into memory, you can pull the micro SD card out. So what that does just kind of right off the top is it creates an additional security assurance for users that if for whatever reason you still had suspicions that your private key might somehow be making it onto the memory card, being able to remove the memory card now like gives people that additional level of insurance that there's no way that my private key can somehow be making it onto the memory card if it's physically removed from it. And a couple other possibilities that that opens up are, number one is it's going to make it much easier to verify your software installation. So if you've set your seed signer up with your like long-term storage and maybe you haven't used your seed signer in 6 months, and in the back of your mind, you're like, what if someone got access to my micro SD card and put, you know, some sort of unwanted code changes on there or something? It's going to make it much easier to where you can just pop your memory card into like your laptop or whatever and hash a range of sectors on the memory card that are that static image that's loaded into memory. And you'll be able to get like an additional level of assurance that you're running, you know, the verified version of the software that doesn't have anything malicious inserted into it. And whereas like you can currently do that with Seed Signer, but it right now it's a process of like writing a new 3.5 gigabyte image to the memory card to know that you're getting like a clean version of the software. Whereas with like this update, once it's implemented, like with the current version of ours, you can't hash it because it's a live operating system. So it's going to change. Like there are changes that are happening on the device after you boot it. So you can't go back and rehash it and try to verify that against our verified release image. But with the new OS, you'll be able to do that. Also, it opens the door to being able to move PSBTs with a micro SD card. Now, we're going to have to be very careful about implementing that. And I think best practices is still always going to be air gap QRs. But there are some people that use Seed Signer that have asked about being able to move PSBTs via micro SD. And for, you know, larger, more complicated transactions, or where you're consolidating a bunch of UTXOs, or you have a larger multi-sig, like I get that it's more convenient. It just has to be something that that is done the right way on our end, and that people just understand that there's an additional level of risk that comes with, you know, removing the memory card and putting in another one that has data on it. Like it's, again, drifting into tinfoil hat territory, but like we just have to keep all these things in mind. So that's high level view. Those are kind of the near term-ish things that I'm excited about.
That's awesome. That's all really exciting. I was going to ask about the micro SD card, like being able to just pop on transactions, but what would be the risk though in just like popping on, you know, an SD card with just, you know, a few PSBTs that you're trying to sign? Like what
right.
would be the, like in your tinfoil hat mind, like what would be, I'm really curious, like what would be the, you know, surface layer there?
Right. And there are ways to mitigate this with Linux in terms of manually mounting and unmounting storage media. But like, let's just say with like a Windows system, because obviously it's less secure. When you insert a memory card into your Windows desktop, like it automatically runs some code that recognizes that as a removable storage volume and automatically mounts it. And there's some just inherent security risks associated with that process. So depending on how you're moving that PSBT around, like it just becomes riskier. There's room for some sort of malicious code to be able to execute when you're moving that device.
Right, because it's like a 4 or 8 gigabyte micro SD card. You can fit a lot of malicious code on there. Meanwhile, like a QR code, you can't really just stick a whole program script on a QR code
right.
and that execute.
And
I think you can though, can't you?
Maybe.
Yeah. Oh, you could.
You probably could. But
so there's one thing I want to point out is that like, it's important. So for your private key to leak or for malicious code to be introduced by a Seed Signer, practically speaking, Seed Signer as well as the coordinator you're using would have to be colluding.
Wait, and like, if you want to go full tinfoil hat, like if you want to be, you know, and everything has trade-offs, right? And if you want to be on the more secure side, like your coordinator, so whether that's your phone or whether that's a computer running Sparrow or Spectre, mm-hmm. It should be a dedicated device, right? Like if you're using if you're using your everyday computer, we'll go back, like your everyday Windows computer, right? And you know, a lot of people are like playing games on it or looking at porn or something like that. Like there's a bunch of different threat vectors that open up there because you're using your everyday computer, right? So like best practice wise, you can mitigate a lot of these risks if you're using a dedicated machine as your coordinator. And for larger amounts, that's negligible cost to just have a dedicated machine to do that, or an old phone or something that is dedicated, wiped. Ideally, you know, use one of these non-Google Android forks and just use it only as your coordinator.
Right. And even like, you know, if you set up a laptop that like once you set it up, maybe it never talks to the internet and it's like an additional buffer between you and your coordinator that's actively talking to the internet. But one kind of like security thing that I want to point out, I tweeted about this the other day, because you see like Trezor has their own like, you know, application portal that you use with their, you can obviously use Trezor with Electrum or Spectre or other things, but Trezor has their own software portal that I would suspect that a lot of users just end up being funneled.
99% of users are probably using like Trezor Web Suite or Ledger Live.
Ledger Live. I think I saw on Foundation's website that they're going to implement some sort of like front end coordinator capability. Like it's a security best practice to have what they call separation of duties. So you don't want the entity that is writing the software that you use to interact with the protocol to be the same entity that is writing the software that you use to interact with your private keys, because there's that natural opportunity for collusion between the two parties. So best
practice. It's not even collusion at that point. It's just the same party.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like, yeah, you want to have like that separation of entities so that there's just less likelihood of some sort of malicious process,
right? Like and then if they're tracking, you know, user balances, which they basically
that
are
too, yeah,
you know, they can basically associate an address that ordered from their website to their transaction.
They say they're not, but
they say they're not, but they are.
But they are. They could.
they are.
and just to add on top of that, I think Ledger Live just added support, but just by default, you know, those aren't using your own node. You're using their node. So yeah, you're trusting them with validation, and you're there's an additional privacy trust there.
Absolutely.
Cool. One question I was curious about. I like Lightning a lot, and there's this Lightning Signer project, which is kind of like a way to be able to take the seed and private keys that are like on a Lightning node typically, and being able to abstract that away and have a different device or a different process, you know, manage all the keys there, so it's not just in the node. Mm-hmm. Have you looked at that at all, and like, you know, possibilities of being able to integrate it with something like Seed Signer? It's probably still very early ages for that to be even like a possibility, but
I'm
kind of curious of your thoughts on that.
I am probably woefully under educated about the nuts and bolts of Lightnings. I obviously like use Lightning and understand the high level stuff, but my first thought about that would be is like with Lightning, a part of the security model is that you need high availability of keys, right? Because if you need to, for whatever reason, like close a channel quickly to make sure that you don't, you know, somehow lose funds, you have to have availability.
It needs to be a hot wallet.
Yeah, it basically has to be a hot wallet. So I'm curious about like...
Or a watchtower too. You know, you can offload some of that to a
Which is like a third party basically, right?
Right, yeah. Or it could be, you know...
You can run your own watchtower on a separate server or something.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to have the keys on that, you know, third party or watchtower.
Right. I'm curious about like potential use cases, but I honestly don't know enough about it to be able to comment. I know that there's been one or two people over at Lightning Labs that have, I don't even know if it's related to Lightning, who have been in contact and kind of like playing around with Seed Signer and curious about some of the possibilities with it. But what I love about Keith's rewrite of the code that he's currently going through is that it makes it much more modular and makes it much more to where you can insert different functionality. So it potentially opens the door to where you could build a version of Seed Signer that is PGP compatible, to where you could use it to encrypt and decrypt messages by swapping out some of the functionality while maintaining kind of the same UI elements and the same hardware set. So maybe, you know, depending on the opportunities with Lightning, something like that is an opportunity as well. I guess we'll just have to kind of see.
Yeah, that's kind of awesome. With the device specifically, do you see any other, you mentioned PGP, do you see any other like you know, maybe it's not on your roadmap, you know, but maybe some hacker out there, you know, wants to just, you know, have fun with something. You see any other interesting non-Bitcoin related projects that you could like use this same model for? You know, maybe it's just PGP, but do you know of any others that come to your mind?
Other people, like we spoke a little bit before we went on air about like possibly a password manager. I'm not entirely sure what that implementation would look like, but like that's the beauty of FOSS and open source, right? If somebody else has like an opportunity they see and they have like the skills, like it, the code's out there and we're happy to like see other people working with it and building with it. So yeah, we'll just kind of keep an eye out.
That's awesome. And it is a MIT license, I believe.
It is. That was one of the things that like I think I talked to Matt a little bit about. When
we literally talked about it on air because you were about to make the decision, 30,000 blocks ago.
That was like that was probably the hardest decision I've made with regard to Seed Signer. That like I feel good about in retrospect, but I don't feel great about the process that we got there with.
What about that?
Because when I were kind of a community oriented project, and when it was time for us to pick a license, like we didn't want to keep going forward, just kind of like in the gray area, we wanted to pick a license. I kind of solicited some opinions on Twitter, and I got like a lot of very, we'll call them forceful DMs. Just kind of like people.
Very strong opinion.
Very strong opinions. And even like to the point of, you know, I wouldn't call it like extortion, but people saying like, you know, I was thinking about contributing to your project, but if you don't go with MIT, like, well, I just can't do it either because my employer doesn't allow me to contribute to things that aren't MIT, or it's just not consistent with what I think software should be.
So like the two choices were basically, so MIT, just unpack it here, MIT license is a unrestricted free open source license. Anyone can modify the code,
right,
distribute the code, sell the code, use it for however they want to do. Then I guess your other choice was GPL v3. Which anyone can modify, distribute, or sell, but they have to keep that code GPL v3. With MIT, they can relicense the code however they want to do it. They can even make it closed source if they want to.
Right. Some people refer to GPL v3 as copyleft.
Right.
As well, and I'm sympathetic to that licensing scheme, and it like ultimately it comes down to choices and trade offs. What could happen with MIT is that somebody could take our code and like monetize Seed Signer out from under us to where they build, you know, some sort of commercially available product that uses our code. But that's just kind of like that's the nature of the beast. Like we're so focused on.
Well, they could do that with GPL too, but in that case, they could do it and like not contribute back upstream and keep their contributions restricted, or
you're absolutely
not
right.
Even source viewable, but they can change it so it's just source viewable, so you can't even use the changes that they do even if they don't contribute upstream.
Or they could just take our code and go completely
closed source
closed source too.
And like a lot of people would say, you should just never use a closed source hardware wallet. But meanwhile, you know, Ledger is probably the most successful hardware wallet in the business, and they're closed source, partially closed source.
Right. It's you know, props to the other projects for being open source. We talked about this a little bit at the meetup last night, but I kind of see Seed Signer as and some of the DIY projects as like kind of a new generation of hardware wallets that are the second generation is kind of these secure element enabled, USB connected, purpose built and designed devices that are, you know, sold by companies. And when they first were made available, like, I don't want to knock them, like they were huge security, like leap forward
improvement, right? Yeah, people don't remember, like new people, like it used to be before Reddit completely died, like r/Bitcoin. It was just like every day you would see a new post about someone whose computer got compromised and their keys swept.
And they hadn't even added like, you know, any sort of encryption or anything to their keys, you know, in their core storage. So like when Trezor came out and when other hardware wallets started to come out, like huge leap forward, that gave people a ton of security. But like security is an evolution and it's a process. And I think like a few things falling into place are creating this like new evolution of the security process that has an emphasis on multi-sig. Because frankly, a lot of the current wallets, I've heard feedback that they're not created with multi-sig first in mind. So an emphasis on multi-sig, an emphasis on publicly available components, I guess you'll say. You can build a signing device from non-Bitcoin specific components, so you don't have to give your information to a distributor or hardware wallet, so you can maintain that degree of privacy.
Right, like we saw with Ledger, their customer database got compromised, and then a bunch of customers, like home addresses and email addresses, were all exposed in that.
Yeah, it's horrible, and that's something that doesn't get talked about enough, because as the value of Bitcoin grows, like, it's just a huge kind of like honeypot that is sitting out there for people.
And you can't even buy a Ledger. I'm pretty sure you can't buy a Ledger with Bitcoin. So like, you're also using your credit card,
which is
literally just corporate surveillance card.
Right. So I see like multi-sig first. I see like people being able to DIY and leverage open source code. And I also see air gapping as like a huge step forward. I think that over time, most of the major hardware wallet makers are going to get away from that USB connected device, because it's like, again, you know, is something going to happen if you have a USB connected hardware wallet? Like, in great likelihood, their security precautions are adequate. But as we refine,
like, I don't think we've seen a single, like, I think your concerns are valid, but I'm pretty sure, at least for the majors, like the Ledgers and the Trezors, we haven't seen a USB style attack,
like a USB
actually executed in the real world.
Right. Now, what I would throw out, like, this is my kind of spook warning, is like, as someone who previously worked in law enforcement,
as
like,
a previous spook,
you can trust me now.
see you later.
The federal government like has, and I've, you know, during my career had access to it. Like, they have exploits for like the Android platform, for the iOS platform. And there's nothing to say that they don't have access to zero-day exploits for one or more of the commercially available hardware wallets that we just don't know about.
Right.
That could leverage either USB connectivity, or that could just be getting your hands on the device and taking it apart to exploit the hardware.
That's why we're being a little like, I think rightfully so, there's criticism leveled at Ledger here throughout this discussion, but they do deserve props for their Ledger Donjon security team, where they basically are just taking these commercial hardware wallets, their own hardware wallets and other hardware wallets, and they're trying to compromise them. They're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to compromise them and releasing their findings rather than... which is what you want to see. You want to see, you know, good actors in the space. You want to see positive actors in the space trying to compromise all these things, so we know, you know, what kind of vulnerabilities are out there, rather than getting surprised by 0 days. Or
yeah, that's a great service, just to leverage that kind of like white hat adversarial thinking to expose vulnerabilities and disclose them before bad actors do.
That's awesome. Yeah, is there like, have you or anyone else like done, like, what are the analysis this year? Like, basically, once you unpower this device, like the seed is gone, the seed is wiped, right?
Right.
But in theory, like, what if someone, you know, were to get their hands on it, like, while it was on, right? So like, basically the model here, like, we can assume, like, you know, someone gets the Ledger and someone gets the Trezor, like, some people in this space will say, assume that if someone gets their hands on it, it's compromised, and you know, those are completely powered off, you know, in their default state. So right. Assume it's compromised. But like, I love this model because, like, you know, assume once you unplug it, like, there's nothing to be compromised, right? Like, it's safe.
Right. So the way it's engineered is that when you enter your private keys into it, they're stored as temporary Python variables that just live in memory. So, and we've gone to additional lengths to make sure that, like, through virtual page file or swap file, like, your keys don't somehow get involved in that and end up being written to the memory card. Like, we disable virtual paging. But yeah, your keys exist in RAM, and RAM is by nature volatile memory, meaning that once power is removed from the media, like, the information that's stored on it just dissipates and goes away.
But you still, you want to keep your seed signer physically secure, because you still have like evil maid attacks. I know maids get a bad rap because of that term. But if someone like gets access to your device, they could compromise, they might not be able to pull the seed from it, but they can compromise it and load up like a malicious version of SeedSign. And the next time you put the seed in, they can maybe store it or take it, or they could even, there could be a physical attack where they add, you know, some kind of transmission mechanism. So like, or it looks like they just swap out the device. So like they take your device and put a compromised one that maybe has Wi-Fi in it, and then they can just transmit it out. So you want to keep it physically secure. You want it, you don't want it to be out in the open where someone can get access to it. And that goes for all hardware wallets, but I would say particularly the seed signer, because it, you know, doesn't have a secure element on it.
Right. I'd kind of compare it to that private but not secret sort of framework that we use for like extended public keys and wallet descriptors. It doesn't require the absolute security that you would give to your private keys, but like you're saying, you definitely don't want to leave it out, you know, for any sort of malintended third party to interact with it, because they could jack with, like you said, creating some sort of mechanism that does capture the private keys, or they could jack with your PSBTs, or they could, like you said, right, with the hardware, put something else in there. Yeah, just to go back to like the mitigator for that is obviously if you feel like you left your seed signer out or somebody used it that you don't feel is like a trusted third party or anything like that, the solution is just to zero out the memory card and write a new fresh version of the software. And that's going to mostly counteract what could be done.
Open up the case, look at it.
Right, right.
Or, you know, it's $60, just build a new one.
Right, right, right.
Never be too paranoid.
I agree.
I mean, I thought that was a good question because I wanted to actually, I was going to frame it a little bit differently, because Seed Signer used to be the person who's sitting in front of us, used to be like a digital forensics guy for the police, for the cops. And he would literally go in and, you know, look at computers and stuff that criminals had to try and see what kind of information was there. And I thought it's kind of an interesting dynamic that like whoever replaced him, there's some like young seed signer replacement. And he's like going into, he's seeing a seed signer on the table and he's trying to compromise it. Right. It's come full circle.
He's like, WTF is this first?
What is this Nest controller?
Exactly. Yeah. And just to strike back on the points you guys brought up with hardware wallets and the PIN security on them. Like that's something I've seen firsthand from my time in digital forensics is unfortunately people don't use really secure PINs just as a habit. Somebody who has like either had knowledge of or had to like brute force like PINs on people's Android phones or their iPhones, like people use the most brain dead stuff. Like they're, you know, it's always their date of birth, last four, their social security number.
Or 1111.
Yeah. Or 1234, you know, whatever. And that's actually like some of the tools that are created to exploit like iPhones and stuff, they have like every time they crack like a PIN code, it gets added to a database. And the next phone you try to crack it, the first thing it runs through is the database of busted PINs, with the theory being that like we're all human beings and we tend to think alike. So if one person used a particular PIN, be it because it was a certain visual pattern on their phone or whatever, like somebody else might have thought of that. So it's a game
human
of
nature,
like,
is terrible entropy.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's why it's important that all these hardware wallets that use PIN codes have rate limiters, or I mean, a lot of phones have settings where like 10 wrong PIN codes wipes the device, or
and some of that can be exploited through like various workarounds. But yeah,
it's all about just mitigating risks. You're never going to eliminate risk completely,
right?
And that's why I think it's always important to remind the freaks that like don't get overwhelmed with this stuff. It's you know, you're never going to have a perfect solution. It's always going to be a constant learning experience and evolution. And you're really just trying to do little steps to continually reduce that risk of coin theft or privacy. Bitcoin Q&A has a good question in the comments. He goes, notoriously difficult for false projects, but does Seed Signer have any alternative revenue stream plans to ensure project longevity?
Is that question coming on behalf of Foundation Devices, or I'm just messing with
it? Take your business model, open source it
for right the now. Freaks that don't know, Bitcoin Q&A is working for Foundation.
And like even like the work he does for them and all of the open source, like openly available walkthroughs he do are awesome. Like I give him a little bit of trouble about the foundation stuff, but like he is an amazing resource and somebody that I personally keep in touch with. So
what are you thinking about revenue? I mean, this is something that is, a very important aspect of keeping the open source community robust and growing is this funding issue. And a lot of times, you know, it comes from grants, whether or not it's donations or a lot of individual donations, or if it's corporations giving donations, or if it's these foundations like HRF or Brink or OpenSats, which I co-founded. Like, how do you look at revenue, and do you have like a business model that you're trying to attach to this, or is it going to only be donation funded? Like,
so just in terms of the larger funding question, I kind of view that in terms of a problem that is in the process of being solved, and it's not like solved yet, but we're getting there. Just to give people kind of like some insight into like how we've historically been funded, and then we can talk forward from that. First off, like we have I think I mentioned it before, a jointly managed multi-sig wallet that is what we call our development fund. And so I tried to give a lot of thought to how we compensate people who contribute to our project. And I tried to approach it from like an early stage venture kind of model, to where every time we release kind of like a major version of the software, we have essentially a scoreboard that scores people's contributions and awards new points to like a scoring pool based on like new features that are added and stuff like that. It's not a perfect system, but it's intended to be like some way of like rewarding people for what they're doing for the project. So when we release a new version, we take some funds from this development fund and we basically split them up according to the proportions of contributions as they exist on the scoreboard. So people accumulate points over time. The challenge with that is just raising, you know, donations at large from, you know, our user base. And some people, have been very generous. I'm sure there are other people that use it and haven't donated yet, but, it has been a good mechanism to provide some sort of reward for open source developers. Especially people who are doing this kind of in their spare time, not as their full-time gig. We recently had like the opportunity at the beginning of the year where Keith previously had, like, from what I understand, like a non-Bitcoin related job. He primarily works contracts. And so he's contracted by a particular company for a set period of time to provide development services. And he had a contract that was expiring and he was looking for a new gig. And Spectre Desktop took him on for about 3 months as a contract gig. So he did some like very cool development work for them. But as of the beginning of this year, like, his contract with them was up and he was looking again for a new gig. And so we started just kind of like raising funds based on the idea of his previous contributions and some of the great innovation that he brought to our project. And there were some very cool companies and individuals that reached out, some of which were anonymous, but some of which were like CoinATM Radar. And I'm going to do a horrible job at remembering specific people that contributed to this, but Keith has done a great job of acknowledging them. And the if you think of those as donations to our project, they've actually been donations to Keith that I don't have a handle in. It's between Keith and the people that are gifting that money. And generally, those gifts have come without strings attached, to where people, you know, are super excited about the possibilities that he brings to SeedSigner, and they're willing to give him kind of open-ended money just to focus a lot of his day-to-day work on SeedSigner. After that, he set up a BTC Pay server and said, like, hey, I'd really like to focus on SeedSigner for the first quarter of 2022. Would any people in the Bitcoin ecosystem be willing to donate some funds to allow me to do that? And like, much to everyone in the community's credit, there were smaller donations that came in, and then we actually had like a $12,000 or $13,000 equivalent donation in Bitcoin that came in. That's an anonymous donation, but like, it's amazing. So Keith will be working on SeedSigner full-time through the end of quarter one, 2022. Moving forward, like, funding is a general question. I can't totally close the door to creating, you know, a purpose-built retail available version of SeedSigner. But what I can tell you is that the open source source off-the-shelf ethos of our project is very important to us. And regardless of anything that we would do with some sort of retail available device, like we are still going to maintain and build new functionality into the do-it-yourself version, because like, and huge credit to Alex Gladstein, who Gladstein, who was like one of the earliest supporters of our project and willing to kind of put a vote of confidence in the project, for recognizing kind of the value of Seed Signer for people in parts of the world where Bitcoin use is either discouraged or even outright banned. People who want to use Bitcoin as a way of just preserving their savings ability or even to fund dissident activities, like Seed Signer is something that's available to them that they can build privately in secret with off-the-shelf components to be able to store their Bitcoin in a more secure way. It doesn't involve them having to try to source a hardware wallet or anything like that. And having that ability out in the world, you know, the attending the HRF conference last year was a very eye-opening experience to me.
That was a great event.
To get a glimpse of like things going on in other parts of the world that, you know, myself as an American don't have a lot of exposure to in the media and just in, you know, news sources or persons that are within my circle. So it's a long-winded way of saying that functionality and that ability to privately and secretly build a Seed Signer is extremely important to me personally. And it's something that I will not steer the project away from. Like I've had people who live in the Middle East that have reached out to me privately that, you know, talk about why they love the device because they can build it in private and not have, you know, anyone knowing that they're saving with Bitcoin when they would otherwise have trouble obtaining a hardware wallet. They don't want to use their phone because that's inherently less secure, yada, yada, yada. So,
what about, well, first of all, to the freaks that are considering supporting Seed Signer, and you should consider it, it's seedsigner.com/donate. I mean, I have a couple thoughts here. First of all, I mean, Dispatch is designed in a way to try and, emulate kind of what open source projects have to deal with in terms of funding. So we don't have ads or sponsors. It's all community funded. I consider it a free and open project. People can cut it up. They can torrent it. They can do whatever they want with Dispatch. So seedsigner.com/donate. One thought is, first of all, like on the splash screen when you first load up the Seed Signer,
right,
like you should just tell people seedsigner.com/donate to support the project every time they load it up. Like I feel like just a nice reminder, like this is a community funded project. A lot of people want to support it. They need a little bit of a reminder, right? So sure. I think that's kind of a cool idea. The second thing is, I mean, I know we've talked about this privately, and I'm curious if your thoughts have evolved. Like, what are the thoughts on in terms of like ads or sponsors or something? Like, is that a thought? Like to on the splash screen,
yeah,
show a sponsor logo or something like
that's
that.
Not something that we're opposed to at all. We would have to give careful, in terms of a corporate sponsor, we'd have to give careful thought and consideration
right.
to the values of the company that was offering the sponsorship, as well as like the level of sponsorship that they'd be offering to be able to get the splash screen. Another interesting kind of idea that came up was the screensaver on Seed Signer, which I think initiates after a minute or two of device inactivity. So one idea that came up was like for plebs or people in the Bitcoin ecosystem.
It's who plebs.
Damn it. Like,
that there's a debate there, but it's plebs.
Well, I've stumbled into that. For people who are just like, you know, everyday Bitcoiners who would like to develop in like a meaningful way, we thought about when the screensaver comes up, like what if it, every time it bounces off, because we have, if people haven't seen it, like it has a very classic like Microsoft kind of screensaver feel.
I've been staring at it the whole time.
Where you stare at it waiting for it to bounce like exactly into one of the corners and you feel like excited if it gets close to that. What if every time it bounces up against like one of the perimeters, it were just display a different NIM or identity that was chosen by the person who donated or some sort of message, and maybe
that's cool.
Maybe that was something that just lasted for a given like major version release, and then we'd kind of reset it and make it a new version of. So
contribute this amount, and then
right.
your message or
you
your
can get
name
a slot
gets
in the screensaver kind of thing. And this,
I like
stuff,
that idea. I like that idea better than an ad or a sponsor.
Right. This kind of stuff is like what I'm talking about. Where like, you know, we're in the process of gaming these ideas out, not just us, like anybody working open source, just to creatively come out with ways of incentivizing people to make support and to recognize people that make support, like in the way that they like to be recognized. It's just, we'll get it figured out over time. And I think this is one of the things that thankfully, like Bitcoin really does fix this, like beyond the meme, like the ability to send censorship resistant money in flexible denominations anywhere in the world to anybody you want to, like
no middlemen.
Yeah. This can fix open source and the open source funding problem. So I'm bullish on like finding solutions moving forward.
That's amazing. Besides funding, are there any other ways that like people can get involved in the project, or like, you know, maybe some of the needs that you're specifically looking for right now, whether if it's, you know, Python developers or, you know, people that, manage projects or documentation, things like that. Like, what are your like more specific needs right now that people can help out with?
I am like forever looking for people to make demo videos, especially in alternate languages, especially as we emerge into, multi-language support. I'm always excited to have people do walkthrough demos and videos, or people who create documentation. But like the ways that people have found to contribute to the project have been amazing. There's a guy from South America who people have seen like the baseball card style QR cards that we have, where you can manually transcribe your QR code that way. Like that was created by a guy who does graphic design on the side in Brazil. Or our website was built and maintained by a guy from the Philippines who just saw SeedSigner, was excited about it. And he's actually recently launched also like a sales portal, to where like it's tough for me or people in Europe to ship devices or to ship hardware kits to people in Asia. So now like people in Asia have a source where they'll be able to buy a kit. People who just generally like, it sounds like, you know, not trivial, but like people just tell other people about SeedSigner. Like that's, we don't have any kind of advertising budget. We don't have like, you know, I'm on Twitter, but it's not like we have a social media offensive or anything. So like at meetups, just people, Bitcoiners talking to other Bitcoiners, that is our primary way of spreading the word about what we're working on, is like people just saying, hey, like I'll talk for a few minutes at a meetup about SeedSigner and point people to like the website and the repo and stuff. That's such a huge, this is like truly a grassroots thing. That term grassroots is like overused to some degree, but like we are just people that are trying to build like a kick-ass little signing device that provides value to others in the Bitcoin ecosystem. So there's like a myriad of different ways to contribute to that.
Awesome. You got any more questions for him?
Not personally, no.
You're relatively new to open source. You kind of just dove in. What's it been like being a maintainer for an open source project?
This is like the second iteration of that question that I didn't answer well enough in the first.
I'm giving you a second chance. I asked him 30,000 blocks ago, and he froze up a little bit.
So,
and a lot has happened since then too. So I feel like you're more experienced now.
And the repo is like, honestly, the repo, we've gotten more contributions. There's probably, I think, four or five people other than Nick and Keith who were eligible. By the way, shout out to Bitcoin Magazine and for you for organizing the open source tickets.
100%.
Tickets for open source developers is what I'm trying
My pleasure.
To get out. We had a few contributors that, like, when that came out, I made sure to DM them and send them a link to their PR and make sure that they were aware of that program. But the experience of managing a repo like has been probably a reflection of like the amazing collaborators that I have, because me being, you know, it went from me being the only contributor to when Nick came in, like I was reviewing his PRs, but his code was quickly getting to the point that like it wasn't something that I could review at a glance. I really had to sit down and dig in, because I'm not like a coder by trade and I'm not like a Python native thinker. So then as Keith has come in, like it has become more about me responding to issues that are raised and me kind of like creating the new repos, and kind of a big part of what I do is assembling the prepared releases, and I control the private keys that are used to sign those releases. I've become a little bit more like an administrator, but the developers do a great job of playing off of each other to where when there's like early on, I offered Nick like some degree of administrative rights in the repo. And much to his credit, like he totally declined it. He was like, I like having you as a check against the things that like I'm writing. And even if you can't review the code, like it's trivial just to load it onto like a development seed signer where I can swap code out real quickly and I can test like, is it doing what it's supposed to? Does it crash? Does it not crash? Kind of a thing. But Keith and Nick do a great job of kind of like thumbs upping each other's code. So when somebody does a pull request, they do a great job of looking deeply at it. And I rely on them heavily on that just for like, checks and balances as we move forward. But I am super bullish on, we've been doing this for a year, and I am super bullish on as the project gets a little bit more exposure in the Bitcoin space, like getting more experienced Python developers involved. And just like we need, like every project, we need more eyeballs on our code. And people being interested rather to fix like little pain points that they see or little opportunities to tweak it or to like build a new functionality. Like I'm excited for that. And that just helps me like as a maintainer now, I'm kind of like, I feel like my role is less than what it was because we have more people looking at the code and I'm kind of just the guy.
Love to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been
that's one of the main powers of open source projects, right? That they're bigger than any individual and they'll outlive any individual.
And the incentives like frankly are all aligned to where people are incentivized to collaborate with each other and to produce the best version of what they're collectively trying to work on. Like it's this great like collaborative brings out, you know, usually the best in people kind of thing. It's that aspect of open source has been something that I had no exposure to, you know, in my previous life journey, and it has been just an amazing, almost rejuvenative aspect of like my experience with it. Like you see the beauty in people and their goodness, and they're willing to just pitch in and help out like when you need stuff. Like that's just been amazing.
Yeah, that's I think like being able to. That's what I love about open source and open source communities, like the ones that are ran really well and are really successful. It's like being able to foster an environment, being able to create a community, sharing vision, getting people, like-minded individuals to believe in that vision as well. And then, you know, kind of, you know, dedicate, you know, time and effort to, you know, once you find, you know, other people that share the same vision, you almost want to like, you know, work together and like make sure that you guys can come together. I don't know if you have any like other advice for anyone maybe thinking about not only just contributing to you guys, but also just like creating their own, like, you know, how to find and create an open source community.
That's kind of one of the tongue in cheek reasons why I put myself out there is like, you know, I used to be a cop. Like I was not a developer by trade. I had a little bit of like, exposure to coding in college and stuff like that. But like, I am the perfect example of somebody who is not like a native coder. It's not like something that I've done for 5 or 10 years in, you know, some sort of professional capacity. But what I want people to come away with when, you know, I talk to them or they ask me about a project that they have in mind, like it is so important to, in the best way you can, there's a highly underrated skill in this world is just effectively communicating a vision for something you have, an idea you have that you would like to see come into existence, being able to.
Sorry about that, freaks. We got our audio cut off somehow. I don't know where you lost us, but Seed Signer was giving a very inspiring tale of how welcoming the open source community can be. And not to be afraid of jumping in, right?
Absolutely. Just like put your idea out there.
100%. Well, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your time as well, Tony.
Absolutely.
We've been ripping for an hour and 40 minutes. It's time for some lunch. We got a rabbit hole recap in 2 hours. Final thoughts?
Final thoughts are just gratitude. Like I appreciate the opportunity to come down here. The BitKite, who's the organizer of the Nashville meetup, has been like an amazing host like logistically, just in terms of like the meetup that he leads and everybody else who helps with that meetup. If anybody's out there listening and you're like anywhere near Nashville, it's worth like a, it's worth a weeknight of your time to come in and experience it. And just the opportunity to sit here and talk with you guys. And for everybody out there who's built a seed cider or talked about it, like much love, much gratitude. Like I, this, if you'd have told me like a year and a half ago, I was a guy listening to Bitcoin podcasts, like who had just kind of like stepped away from his career as a stay at home dad. And I like was just tinkering with 3D printing and different things. And like to be here, like 18 months later, never would have believed it. Like this is, this has been such an amazing experience that I'm thankful to everybody out there for.
Well, we appreciate you. Thank you.
No, I love it. Yeah, thank you so much for, I mean, you know, at the Nashville Bitcoin meetup, you know, we don't record anything. And I just want to say like your panel with Rockstar and Matt, like that was like as an audience member, I loved it. There was a lot of really good questions and a lot of good answers and it, the back and forth was amazing. So thank you for taking the time to like come here. And then the conversation today as well was amazing. So yeah, my closing thoughts just, you know, along the same vein, you know, just do it, you know, just go to a meetup, you know, if just dive right in. You know, if you have a project, just do it. And, you never know where you're going to end up. If you've never used Seed Center before, just, you know, buy one and just start playing with it. Like you're, it sometimes just seems intimidating going to a big Bitcoin meetup or using a new device that like you've never used before, especially if you've already gotten used to something. So yeah, just dive right in, start playing with it, start going to meetups and, you know, you never know what's going to take you.
I think that's a great final thought. Just a reminder to all the freaks that are interested in the project, that's seedsigner.com. If you want to support the project, that's seedsigner.com/donate. Every sat counts. I think I can speak for them that they really do appreciate all of your support. I will see you freaks for Rabbit Hole Recap in 2 hours. I'll see you for Dispatch next week. I got some of the Spectre team joining us on Tuesday. And I love you all. Cheers. Thanks, guys.
If my senses fail, meet me on the other side of paradise, free from complications of our sense of time. Fill my windless sail with broken echoes of a never-ending line, whispered conversation, twisted faces in the cloud. I've been hot-winged and hoodwinked and dead on my feet. The sound and the fury remain over me. And all of the footprints that fall in a line where our common ancestors wander in hills in the night. If my senses fail, other side of paradise, free from complications of our sense of time. Fill my windless sail with broken echoes of a never-ending line, whispered conversation, twisted faces in the clouds. Question must fall where they will. The thoughts that imprison me walk with me still. And seconds that fly by like days of my life, where I was been wasted on chasing the words of why. If my senses fail, other side of paradise, free from complications of conversation. Twisted faces in the clouds.
Love you, freaks. See you next week. Don't forget to try and support Seed Signer, seedsigner.com/donate. Stay humble, stack sats.